The Table 40 podcast with Matt and Leslie Holiday is presented by Sports Spectrum and the Sports Spectrum Podcast Network. For more shows and stories on the intersection of sports and faith, check out sportsspectrum.com.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to Table 40. Today's special guest Chris and Sarah Young. Chris is our awesome, I don't know what your exact title is. You're the head of all tennis at Oklahoma State. This year, I think you coach both teams, but you are the women's tennis coach. You've been there for 11, this was your 12th year or your 11th year?
12.
12th year, and then you were 5 years at Wichita State. Is that right?
That's right, yep.
All right, so he's our tennis czar at Oklahoma State. He is the head, the women's coach, but also is in charge of tennis in general?
The director of tennis.
Director of tennis. So he's the director of tennis. And recently hired a men's tennis coach. So
that's right.
We could jump right into that. How was that, hiring the men's tennis coach? Like, you led the charge on that. What were you looking for in kind of the characteristics as you look to hire the new men's tennis coach?
Well, you know, I think it's something I've heard you guys talk a lot about on the podcast, just culture. You know, we want to make sure that we have the right culture, the right fit. I think Stillwater and Oklahoma State is a special place. We have a great group of head coaches right now that I think are really connected with each other because we all have the same values and how we want to run the programs here at Oklahoma State. And so, you know, I was entrusted to make that hire, but also knew that it was going to be kind of the newest hire under our new athletic director that was going to be starting. And so I knew that was a big responsibility as well, and to find somebody that you know, he would enjoy working with and somebody he would identify. And the guy that we wound up hiring, Dustin Taylor, is a guy I've known for a long time. He played at Tulsa. And actually, I started my coaching career at Oklahoma Christian back in 2000. And in 2000, 2002, we played against Tulsa. So I always remembered, you know, playing against, coaching against him. And now he's, you know, to think about hiring him is pretty crazy. I guess I'm getting old, but you know, Dustin's a great family guy. He and his wife have 5 kids, so something probably you guys can identify with, raising a family in Stillwater. And so we're excited. They actually have already bought a house right across the street from you guys, so they're gonna jump in here and get started right away. And you know, I think he brings just a lot of the characteristics that we're looking for. And a big thing for me was just I want to go to work every day and have somebody that I enjoy being around. Maybe that's a little bit selfish, but you know, we're a small staff and you want somebody that you just enjoy hanging out with. So Matt, he brought his pickleball paddle with him, like on the interview, because he knew that we played. And I don't know that either. I don't know if we're quite ready for him or he's quite ready for us, but we're going to give him a little time. So
yeah, I've noticed there's a lot of different styles. I was going to tell you, I've recently played in this in Florida. And it's definitely like with the softer, people play a little slower. I tell people they need to come into the heat zone of the barn, where the sport court, where it's a little faster game. Like there's not as many dinks. And if you leave it up, you're getting hit.
That's so, right.
Anyway, we can get into pickleball, but I don't think, Sarah, I didn't give you your due on the introduction. I feel bad about that. Chris and Sarah Young. Sarah is the better half of this relationship. I've been around Chris enough now to know that Sarah is the real winner of this couple. But Sarah, we really appreciate you coming on, and we've really enjoyed our time being around you. And we know that you are the one behind Chris's great wisdom and his answers that he gives us.
Thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, and Sarah doesn't
say a whole lot, but when she does, you better listen, because she's thought about it quite a bit. And so she gives me all the behind the scenes wisdom for sure.
No doubt.
Oh, let's talk about how you guys very first met. And so let's just start there. And then I'm really excited to pick Sarah's brain on a couple things that I'm learning being married to a new coach's wife. So I'm excited to learn from you tonight. But let's talk about how y'all met.
Go ahead. I'll fill in.
Okay, she said she'll fill in where I messed up, which is probably going to be a lot. But, you know, we've actually known each other our entire life. Both of us, our parents were ministers. And so my parents went on some mission trips with her dad and mom. And so our parents have known each other for forever. So our entire life, I always knew, like, who she was. And at times our families would be around each other. But she's a year older than me, so she always thought, like, you know, she was too good for the younger guy.
I was too cool.
Yeah. So our stories are actually, you know, very similar because we got married very young, and we identified with you guys. You know, during COVID, we would take like long walks and listen to you guys' podcasts and listen to everybody. And we identified with so many people, but mainly you guys' story, because we got married. I wasn't even 21 yet. So she was. And so going on the honeymoon was kind of an adventure there. But, you know, I was playing at Lipscomb University in Nashville, Tennessee, and came home one summer, and my dad was running a church camp. And so I went down to kind of just see my family, and she was there as a counselor, but she was recruiting for Oklahoma Christian. And we started dating then. And by the end of the summer, I was transferring there to continue playing, and it worked out very good for us because we've been married ever since. And I finished playing there and began my coaching career there. So, you know, everything kind of worked out and started there.
23 years.
Yeah, we've married 23 years in August.
That's amazing. Sarah, you're quite the recruiter.
I know. I should have gotten like a discount on my tuition because I brought them a tennis player that they couldn't get when he was out of college. But
a couple of cradle robbers, these girls.
That's right. On the cradle. That's right. Exactly.
The younger men.
They played it off as though, you know, we had to chase them for a while, but we knew all along. No, they
married younger.
We can get them young. See, we can mold y'all the way we want you.
Yeah, that's very true. It is funny that you said that about the honeymoon, because I remember when we were on our honeymoon, which was like a day, on the way to this winter development baseball camp thing. And anyway, but I remember sitting at dinner, like watching people watch us, and I thought they felt like we snuck there, or we like didn't pay for the bill or whatever. Like, we felt so weird.
Well, we were at the Broadmoor in Colorado Springs, which we were probably the youngest people there by about 35 years. Yeah. But people were looking at us like they were looking for our parents. Like, kids in here, like they're checking in. Like,
up and they stuck in here somehow. Yeah, I don't know. It felt really funny.
So young. So tell us about, like, so being both kids of ministers, of preachers, what was that like growing up, as far as growing up in the church and your faith and how your kind of faith journey progressed to where you're at now?
I grew up in a small town where my dad was the minister, and I mean, we moved around a lot when I was little, but then I moved to a place and started fifth grade and then graduated from there. So pretty much grew up in a small town in Arkansas where he was the minister. And I mean, he just retired from ministry about a month ago. So he's been in it a long time. And so that's kind of all I've known in my life. Being a minister's kid, I wasn't the cliche, terrible preacher's kid. I was not that people talk about. It was just what I knew. So, I mean, my memories are just, my mom was such a wonderful minister's wife that I got to see that side of it. And I mean, we went to church on Sundays, and then there was always somebody at our house for Sunday lunch, and she'd always made lunch. So that part of it I saw, and I hope that I'm as hospitable as she is, but I do believe growing up with that, my faith was always in the church. But I do feel like when I went off to college and you do become your own person, then that's when it definitely became my own. But my foundation is definitely from my parents and growing up as a preacher's kid, for sure.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. You know, we both grew up in the Churches of Christ, and you know, we related a lot when you guys had Lance Burtman on, just because, you know, he kind of said the same thing. And you know, I think you know, through that faith, you just get such a good foundation, you know, very biblically based, and you know a lot of the scriptures, and you know a lot of things from being around it at home and just kind of seeing it. But you know, I think practicality and just practicing it as you get older, it becomes, you know, a little bit different. And maybe, you know, just looking at it and saying, did I do this because it was tradition and because I was what I was supposed to do, or is this really who I am? And in what I believe. And I think as you get older and you start raising kids and you start looking at things from a different perspective, you know, you start just to challenge things and look at things a little bit differently. And then, you know, life happens and, you know, life circumstances happen. And I think, you know, over the last 5-6 years for us, life has really, you know, happened with us through Sarah. And I think, you know, just it challenges, do I really believe, because it's very easy sometimes to always think, well, and people tell you, people around, well, you should just think about this verse when this is happening, or you should do this or that. And it's like, it's not always, unfortunately, that easy, you know, just that sustains you, that sometimes there's just a little bit more to it, a little bit more depth to it. And you just look at it and say, okay, you know, what is it that I want my kids to know? And, you know, I think ultimately it has to be your own, and you have to be authentic with who you are and what your faith is. And, you know, that's what I took from what you were saying, Matt, today, is just like being authentic and being real, not only as a coach, but just as a person, because people just relate to that. People see through it. Coaches, you know, kids see through it for sure. And, you know, you just want to be around somebody that's real and not trying to be somebody that they're not. And I think that's hopefully who we are as a family. It's just, this is kind of who we are and, you know, what we do. And I think our faith is a big part of that.
That's really good. I love what you said too about, is this tradition or is this like an authentic faith? And I think that oftentimes, because I was like y'all, I was raised in a church, and I think that that was a tension or a battle that I kind of had to navigate as I was finding out who I really was as a young woman and a follower of Jesus. Is like, am I going through the motions here? Is this just because of habit or whatever, or is this authentic? And am I truly pursuing Jesus in whatever situation that I was facing at the time? And so I like how you worded that. That was really made me think about a couple things. So I like that a lot.
So let's talk about coaching. So you've been coaching 16, more than that, almost 20 years, right? Probably
close, yeah, 20. To 20 years. Yeah, this was my 20th season.
So you've been coaching 20 years. What are things you would say now that you would do differently maybe when you started out? Like what have you learned in 20 years? Things that maybe you worried about when you were a younger coach that now you realize aren't that big a deal, or when you're recruiting, what do you look for now that maybe you didn't look for then, that you find building a team, you know, certain things may be more important than maybe you thought they were 10 years ago, 20 years ago. What are some of those things that come to mind?
Well, I feel bad for my first teams, because I feel like, man, I'm so different now, and I wish that I could go back and coach some of those kids. I just want to say I'm sorry to the first, you know, few teams that we had. And you know, even in 2003, you know, at Oklahoma Christian, we won the first ever national championship at the school. But I mean, I was just kind of a small part of it. You know, I didn't really know what I was doing as much. And, you know, I think you just grow with life experiences and different kids. And, you know, I think the schools that I've been at, we've recruited a lot of international kids. And I think that's helped me grow as a person too, maybe be like a little bit less judgmental, because you see people that come with so many different life experiences and have lived life completely different than you have. And, you know, I think it just challenges to be really like more open-minded, that, you know, life experiences kind of shape who you are. And just because I've done things a certain way doesn't mean it's the right way to do it. And I think that can cover a lot of things in life. But, you know, I think ultimately when you're a young coach, winning is like the only thing. And that's like what consumes you. And you think, you know, I got to prove myself. I thought I had to prove myself. You know, I wasn't like the greatest, you know, person. I was never like an All-American in college. I kind of had to work for everything that I did. And so you get as a coach and you think, okay, I've got to show people that took a chance on me, whether it was at Oklahoma Christian or, you know, in Wichita State hired me. You know, even though we had a lot of success, it was at the NAI level. So to go from an NAI to Division I, it's a big jump. And I was just very blessed that the athletic director there took a chance on me. And a lot of it honestly had to do with my faith. He was a believer, and he felt, you know, that was going to be something that was going to help me be more of an authentic coach to the players and really give them a great experience. And I think just overall, sometimes you start to, you know, earlier in your career thinking that you have to prove yourself, and, you know, maybe you're doing some things just with the only goal of winning in mind. And now it's like, look, I'm not going to take any chances on the culture that I want to have and the foundation that I want to have and the principles and the ethics and the integrity of my program you know, I'm not going to sacrifice that just because a kid's talented. And so many times it's, I think as coaches, we think we can change the kid. And deep down inside, we know like this kid's not going to change for us. They just, you know, sometimes, especially being at a school like Wichita State when I was there, or sometimes even Oklahoma State, you get a high recruited kid and they think they're almost doing us a favor by coming to us. And, you know, they think, oh, you know, we're going to be desperate enough to mold our entire program around what this kid wants. And I think that as a coach, you just learn that never works, because, you know, the team is not going to buy into the fact that I've sold my soul for this one kid. So I think ultimately just being really true to who I am. I think in recruiting, you get the kids you're supposed to get, because you get the kids that identify with you. They want to come play for you because they believe in what it is. And so I don't get too worked up when you lose a recruit anymore, because it's like, for some reason, that kid didn't identify with me. They didn't really feel that I could bring out the best in them. And that's probably for the best, because maybe it didn't work out. And sometimes even on my side, I have to feel in the recruiting process, like, this kid may have more stars or be more talented than this other kid, but I really can relate to this other kid better. And I think we're going to bring out the best in each other in that situation. And so sometimes you just have to swallow your pride a little bit and say, you know what, I'm going to go this direction. And, you know, our team that made the finals in 2016 was a team that was talented, but they weren't the kids that were, you know, the most highly recruited. They were just the kids that came together behind a common mission and kind of all believed in each other. So I think that's probably a long answer to, you know, to say a lot, lots change. But I think just really identifying your principles and what you stand for as a coach, the longer you do it, I think the more that becomes clearer to you. And I think it really helps you just to establish what your program is really all about.
Yeah, and Sarah, what have you seen over the last 20 years? I mean, 20 years is a long time, so it's fair that that answer was long, because that's a really long time to be doing something. But what have you seen in like his growth as a man and as a coach and as an encourager? Because I think one thing I've noticed in my short time as Matt, you know, pursuing coaching with a lot more intention, I think like, man, you just have to be such an encourager. And with, especially with college kids. So I'm just curious, like, what growth have you seen in Chris as his wife and someone that, you know, you get all the good stuff, right?
That's right. Well, I was gonna say, and I wanna add on, like he's coaching girls. So like, how many times does he come home and you're like, let me explain to you what's going on.
Yes, let me interpret.
Yeah. I mean,
daily.
I was going to start with that, because that's a big part of it, him coaching girls. And like many times I have said, he has way more patience than I would have with a group of girls. So I definitely think he's definitely gotten more patience over 20 years. But I think the thing for our family that I've seen the biggest growth in is him being able to come home to the family and like leave that loss at the court and not bring it back to the house. I mean, as far as him changing, I think that was hard, obviously, at the beginning, because he's so competitive. And so a loss is really hard to handle. But when you've got, you know, two toddlers at home that don't have any idea if you won or lost the game, you know, you have to come home and realize that, yeah, when you get home, it's a different life. We don't care if you win or lose, you know, we're going to be there to support you no matter what. So I've definitely seen a change in him as far as like leaving that behind and just coming home to be with his family and being like the dad and the husband instead of the coach when he comes home every time.
Well, how hard has that been as your kids get older and they've pursued sports? And I mean, I know I'm sort of jumping ahead a little bit, but I mean, we're going through the same sort of thing, right? Our kids are older, they're pursuing sports. You're a gifted coach and you're a coach's wife and you guys have been through this and you've seen it all. And so, man, teach us what to do. I mean, we're struggling. We're in the thick of it with our kids. Like, how do you leave coach at the field, right? Like, and be a dad.
Yeah.
Like, how do you navigate and balance that whole thing?
Yeah. I mean, we do not have the answers to that, but I would say one thing we've always wanted to make sure our kids knew is that they did not have to play tennis. because, you know, I mean, you have a kid and everyone just assumes they're going to play whatever sport you coach and they're going to be the best at it no matter what. And so from day one, we were never forcing a tennis racket in their hand, wanting them to try anything they wanted to try and support them, you know, no matter what they do. So it is definitely, you know, it's hard to be just the parent and not the coach. I mean, both our kids play tennis now of their own choice. So it is hard. I don't know what you would say.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is, you know, you guys would attest to in Matt especially, is like, you know what it looks like. I know what it needs to look like. And so it's hard because, you know, there's times where I'm telling him like, look, I mean, I told Sarah today, it's like, I feel like sometimes I have to be the bad guy because a lot of people won't tell him the honest truth. I think that's just life, right? Like some people, they know that he's my kid and he's maybe, you know, with some other kids or with some other coaches, and they let some bad habits slide because, like, you know, they're just going to like be nice to him. And it's like, no, look, I mean, at some point somebody has to tell you the truth, and, you know, like it or not, that's, you know, going to be me because I care enough about your development and just what you need to do. And, you know, maybe that's just more discipline or these things. And so I've always let my assistant coaches or other people coach him, and then I would just hit with him as dad. But I told him, you know, at whatever point you want me to coach you, I'll coach you. Yeah. But when I coach you, it's going to be this way. And so you have to decide, like, do you want it this way? Because you can't take it personal. And I think that's hard. It's a lot harder for our daughter. You know, she takes it personal a little bit more.
Going back to the girls. Yes. Yeah.
But, you know, I think during the COVID time, he and I spent a lot of time because I had no one else to coach. So I was itching to coach somebody. So we kind of came to this agreement that we would do it. And, you know, he's improved a lot. He played his first national tournament today or this weekend. And so fortunately that was in Oklahoma City. And so he's improved a lot, but he got kind of a late start because we didn't push it on him. And now he's wishing he would have done it earlier, and all those things kind of come into play. You know, but at the end of the day, I think, you know, it's just what's meant to be, and life's going to happen the way that it is. And so we just try to tell him, don't force it, you know, because he wants everything to happen right now. He wants like it to happen the way that he perceives it's going to happen. And you know, I told him, look, there's so many stories. You have to run your own race because so many people, you know, you may have to walk on if you want to play college. I don't know, but there's so many people that have done that and then had success. So I think for anybody listening, I think that's the biggest thing I would say to everybody is, you know, run your own race, whether it's a player or it's, you know, helping your kids, just teaching them to run their own race. And I think that's the hardest thing. But even as a coach within our team, I have to tell our team all the time, run your own race. Your race is going to look different than everybody else on our team. And if you can just be okay with that, that yours looks different and maybe it's a different timeline than you thought, everything's going to be okay.
I was just going to ask, like, don't you think comparison and like Instagram and all the social media is just steals some of these kids as like their joy of the process. And they just, you know, they just can't, I just hate for a lot of it, even like the rankings and all this stuff for my boys in the high school and even down to Ethan's age and lower, they have these national rankings now. And it just, I think this comparison and like you're talking about, like run your own race, like focus on the game, the process, like focus on the practice and the sacrifice of getting better and don't worry about those things. But I don't know if it's even possible because of all of the social media and these kids. I mean, and it's just the time we live in. I mean, how do you address that with your players or even your kids, or, you know, just the comparison, the thief of joy? Like how do you address that?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was talking to a couple coaches that were there recruiting at this tournament today, and they were asking me, there's a clay court national championship next week. And used to be, you know, years ago, July 1st was the first time before a kid's senior year you could talk to them. And so at the clay court national championships, it was the tournament that happened a couple of days later. And so everybody would set up tables, they would call them booths, and the kids would kind of like parade around and meet with the coaches the first time. And you know, a coach in the Big 12 asked me like, are you doing the booth this year? And I'm like, man, I haven't done a booth in like 10 years. I mean, that like seems so ancient. Like that's the way we used to do things. But now there's recruiting services. And like, if you're waiting to July 1st for the kid's senior year, you know, it's way behind in the game, you know? And so I think to your point, Matt, like there's so much money being made off of all of this that kids are aware of things so much more. And, you know, there's some things that are super helpful. You know, I used to have to do the booth because the only way I could find out information is they would give you a book on the kids, like all the kids' profiles. And it was really before their profiles were on the internet. So I didn't know how to contact the kid or anything unless I spent the money to go host this booth just for the book, you know, with the players' profiles.
Did you serve lemonade at your booth? Like, I mean, yeah. I'm just picturing this booth where you have lemonade and snacks.
You know,
like,
you know, the most humbling experience was like, you know, I got to Wichita State and it was my first time to do a booth. And I was so excited. I'm D1 now. I'm not NAIA anymore. And I set up my booth and like nobody's coming. And like next to me was like Virginia, which was like a hot school at the time, and like Duke and these other schools. And their lines are like 10, 20 deep.
I'm picturing,
you know,
The Office, the episode on The Office exactly. Where they have the booth and nobody wants to come talk.
Exactly. And I'm like, I'm trying to figure out, like, do I start serving lemonade? Do I do something for these kids that are in line? Like, while you're waiting, do you want to just have a quick conversation? Yeah. Or can I do something? Because I'm sure you're hot standing in line. Like,
you need a party trick or something to get
there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I realized then I wasn't as creative. I was going to have to get really creative or do something, or I wasn't going to last very long. So. I think it is hard. That's the hardest part right now, is there's just so much that kids are aware of, and it's almost impossible to keep them away from seeing what their peers are doing. And it's hard. I mean, it's just I don't think they're mature enough at this age to be like, I can block all that out, because we're not, you know, even as a coach, I'm not, you know, I'm watching what other coaches are doing and seeing what they're doing and seeing how I need to compete with them. And so I'm just as guilty of it, you know. I think sometimes in coaching, I always think that coaches blame their players too much. Oh, we're losing because of our players. And I always take a look at myself and say, you know what, like, why are we not having the success? It starts at the top as a leader. And I kind of, this is the same type of thing. You know, we always want to blame the outside. I think, you know, sometimes even as parents, we just have to look at ourselves and say, how can I do a better job of helping my kid run his or her own race? Because that's the most important thing we can do for him, really.
Yeah, that's wise. And I really like what you said too about a timeline. Like, I think that's something that our kids don't see, that we do see as parents, is like, just wait a second, buddy, like, this is going to happen for you. But, you know, and I don't know, I just think you guys are so right. And just, they just move too fast. The kids move too fast. And they just want to accomplish something today that's not going to happen for a little while longer, you know. And anyway, that's good. I also agree with you that we need to be the ones to help them navigate that. But I think I've been so intimidated by it, honestly, for a long time, because that's nothing. I didn't deal with that as a child or even in college. And I mean, we didn't even do social media when Matt played. And so I'm just so intimidated about how to have that conversation and what boundaries are really appropriate, and where am I gonna how can I navigate something that I really just don't know a whole lot about? And so I think for me, unfortunately, what I've done is just retreated from it and been like, I don't know, I mean, you know. And so, and just haven't had the confidence to have a good conversation with my kids, other than like, put your phone away, you know. And so, I gotta get it together. You're right, that's right, it starts with us, for sure. And you, yeah, you need to.
Are you? Is that a question?
She said you gotta get it together.
I'm just agreeing. Okay. We need to do this together. Okay. We need to have a family meeting after this conversation.
Okay.
Sorry, Matt. I apologize.
No, I was just waiting for her to ask a question, and then she looked at me. I'm like, are you gonna ask a question, or are you just, just making a statement?
It was just a rant. Okay. Like, I just started thinking and processing out loud.
Okay.
So anyway.
All right. Well, let's talk marriage a little bit. So you guys have been married longer than us, but we're right behind you. But let's talk about, so I was just thinking about, you guys have dealt with some health issues and we've dealt with some health issues. What's that been like on your marriage, and how have you guys worked through, I was thinking about it, like, just suffering, like, and we're talking about like just hard things, and like some days and some waves of life are easier and more comfortable. And then there's times in our lives where it's difficult and hard, and health and things that put stress on your marriage. How have you guys, what's some good advice for married couples that are going through hard things or some stress? How have you guys dealt with some of the difficult days and months that you've had?
I definitely think our motto has just been one day at a time. I mean, obviously I've had health issues for 6 or 7 years, and it's not going to go away. It's just something I'm going to have to deal with for a long time. But it was, we just always knew that we were doing it together. I mean, it's just, it's kind of like just when we started our marriage and even in coaching, like we were going to do this together. And so as a family, everybody's in it and we help each other no matter what it is. And so, I mean, I'm very blessed to have Chris to be my guy next to me, because there's lots of bad days, but he's always there. He's never stopped showing up, supporting me, even during the season. I mean, the worst of my health was during their national championship run, which we always look back at that and just always amazed how God used that year, because it was the toughest year inside our house that a lot of people probably didn't know was going on. And then it was turned into this great accomplishment that we could share together. And so, I mean, you know, we've been just through so much together, more than other people would know, but never once did we give up on trying to just keep faith right in the middle and just keep going back to God, even though we were, I will speak for myself, frustrated with what God was putting in our way and wanting to ask, you know, I mean, why is this happening? And I read a quote that just made me change to say, you know, don't ask why is this happening, but why not to me? I mean, this was put in our relationship for a reason. So now we've got to figure out what we're going to do with it. And how can we bless other people and just be an example to others that you can get through something hard, but, and we just, you just can't keep your, you can't give up on God in that situation.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing we've learned too, is just, you never know what someone's going through. You know, I think so many times you see people and, you know, everybody's so good at putting like a facade on the outside that everything is good. And like she said, I mean, you know, some of the best seasons I've had in coaching were when she's been ill on the, you know, inside our home. And I think God did that to kind of give us a little balance, you know, to be able to say, okay, like, it's not all bad, you know, or, you know, you can kind of take this stress and put, you know, put some things out there that help us. And so, you know, when you look back on things, God was always there, but in the moment it's hard, you know, because, you know, he has the power to solve it. And it's like, okay, you know, and I think that probably goes back to maybe how we were raised a little bit, like not in a bad way, but just kind of some faith traditions of like, you know, you hear stories in the Bible, like when the guy's blind was like, well, who made the mistake, you know, his parents or whatever. And sometimes when you have, you know, these things, you think you've done the right things, you think you've lived a good life, and then you still deal with a lot of adversity and you're like, well, what did I do wrong? And you start to think, okay, where did I go wrong to have this negative event happen to us? And then you start to realize that life just happens to everybody. And no matter like if you're a good person or not, doesn't mean that you get to avoid difficult moments in life. It just is going to shape you. And I think it's made us a lot stronger. I mean, we've had to experience things, you know, health-wise and, you know, me helping her in some ways that I never thought I would. And, you know, you just kind of get close through different stuff. And, you know, we spent like weeks at the Mayo Clinic and, you know, you're just kind of going from test to test to test and you're figuring out and you're in the, you know, hospital together or the hotel together and just kind of thinking through, and all you've got is each other. So I think probably we wouldn't trade that, because it's made us who we are and it's made us stronger. Looking back on it, we didn't know that at the time and we didn't really enjoy it and still don't, you know, it's like still, you know, you're just ready for it to be over. But I think that's some of the things that we've learned and has kind of helped us. I think every marriage is going to go through challenges and adversity. And, you know, that's just where you find out like what you're really made of, just like as an athlete, you know, it's like everybody can be good when things are going good, you know, but it's the people who excel are the people that show up and can get through the slumps and figure it out. And, you know, there's times as a coach, I've been a lot better at that than others. And my team reflects that. And, you know, I think same thing with our marriage. When we're good at it, our marriage reflects that. And, you know, when we're not as good, you know, and that's the challenge as the supporter is, you know, be on that side. I know you guys can relate.
Yeah. Suffering is hard. It's just hard.
And I like what you said, Sarah, too, because I think that something that's really important when you go through difficult times and people that are running hard after Jesus is that it's okay to be disappointed in the Lord. And I think that there's a freedom there in our prayer life and a freedom in the body of Christ and a freedom in Matt and I's relationship. You can still honor the Lord and be disappointed in what you got going on. And you are allowed to lament and you're allowed to grieve and you're allowed, like God's okay with that. And he's a big enough God that he can handle our grief and our disappointment. But I think having one another to come to and say, okay, we've got this one day at a time, we're going to do this and I'm with you and you're my person. And we're going to rely heavily on the Lord in because he sees things that we can't see. And I think for us, like as we reflect back on Matt, you know, we do share that like a health crisis that you just are like, man, when is this ever going to end? And it's just one of those things. I think the one thing that there's many things, but the season of life I'm in right now, the one thing that I can say with certainty when I look back on those days is that suffering has shaped my awareness that this is not my home. And that I really look forward to the day that heaven will be my permanent residence. And I think that's the thing for me looking back is in suffering and for such, you know, so many consecutive hours, I guess, yeah. Is the way to talk about it is that it just really, really, really made me realize that I wasn't made for this place and that yeah. God's placed eternity in my heart in a different, I guess I see it a little bit differently now than I did prior to Matt getting sick. And so I don't know if you guys noticed that, but I don't, that's what I love about the body of Christ too, is like, we can have these conversations and it makes me super excited for when we're all dead and we're with Jesus and we just get to.
No, I definitely never, I used to always, you know, like when you're younger or maybe you haven't gone through anything hard and people would, you know, when they're praying, they would say, oh Lord, please come quickly. And oh, I used to be like, no, don't come. You know, I'm having too much fun down here. Yeah. And so then I think when you finally like are going through something hard, I mean, my perspective on that, like you said, has changed 100%. I mean, that's like my prayer now. Like, I am so ready to go to heaven and not have to deal with pain that we have down here. And that's the every day you can wake up to that and it gets you through. That's how I look at it.
Yeah. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Do what we can on this path. Yes. But
yeah.
Yeah. No doubt. Okay, Sarah, let's talk about change the subject a little bit, but let's talk about being like very supportive pickleball wifers. Is that right? Like I feel like there was a season in our life where they were playing every single day for hours. Yeah.
It was the season.
It was the pickleball season. And it became very competitive. And I'd be like,
oh, it's coming back too.
Where's Matt? And they're like, oh, he had to find a game. He had to find games.
You know, you have like... Live 360. You know where the dot is. The dot is the barn. Oh, that's yes. Where it's at.
Yes, your barn is on Live 360.
Yeah.
You know where it's at. I will say my side of it, since I have older kids, teenagers, you know, he'd be like, I'm going to go play pickleball. I'm like, you go right after it. You just go do that. I will watch what I want to on TV.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, good. It's healthy.
Yeah,
it's a healthy balance. I'm okay with the pickleball.
Yeah,
I think it's a lot of pressure being the pickleball partner of Matt, though, because you know I'm the tennis coach. I'm supposed to bring you know that, and he's a competitive person, so I have to really like be on my game. The few very rare times that we've lost, I've really taken it hard and had to get her support when I come home. I'm like, I'm sorry, Matt, I let you down. And I come back to Sarah and I'm like, you know, look, I got to get it together. I mean, I may need to go back tonight and do some extra work.
Do some drills
or something.
Well, the problem is that people were playing. Like, we play some real, like, competitive, like, they're not afraid. Like, they think if they beat us once, like, all of a sudden they hold the title. And so,
yeah.
You know, when Esposito and Steve Carpenter and some of the people that we play, you know, I think we should dominate. And when we don't, I'm disappointed in us, in me.
Yes.
And, you know, when you're down, I got to be up. And when I'm up, you know, we gotta pick each other up.
It's a pickleball marriage.
I feel like we're a good team. But, you know, when you guys were talking, I can't remember, one of your guests was having a pickleball like charity event. I told Matt, like, that's going to be our next life. Let's get these kids through. And we're going to be on the circuit. People can bring us in for pickleball challenges. And, you know, we might not always be the greatest, but we're going to provide great entertainment. The two of us, we're going to entertain.
Leslie, I was just make the lemonade.
We were in Hoover.
Get a booth.
We were in Hoover a couple weeks ago with Ethan's tournament, I think, and Leslie wasn't there. I was by myself, and there's a convention center up by the Hoover Met, and somebody said there's pickleball going in on that convention center. So of course I wandered up there, and they had I think it was a girl and a guy tournament, but they had tons of pickleball courts set up on this deal, and I was like watching them all, like, I think we could take them. I mean, I know it was co-ed, but they were still like, this was a competitive tournament. And I was like, I feel like we're with the right amount of practice. I think we're competitive. I mean, again, I haven't seen the guys, the champions. I know their net game is amazing, but I think there's potential for this.
I think we could beat anybody at your barn. I think we have definitely a home court advantage, just a different style there, you know?
And yeah.
I mean, that's how I feel like Matt and I got to know each other, was through the pickleball experience a little bit more. And it's like, okay, now I'm starting to learn, like, you know, when his competitive juices get flowing, like, I see why he was great. You know, I mean, I see like how he holds himself accountable and what he does there. And you know, look, if we have a bad day, we're ready to get back at
it. Yeah, it pisses me off. And even like pick up basketball, like I there's times where I have to be like, the year that I played intramural basketball in the league with the college kids and found myself like, I had to take a break and count to 10 and ask myself what I was doing. So I had to check myself a couple times with that, but I feel better about hitting Steve with the ball than I do about like roughing up college kids. So yeah.
I can feel now being his partner long enough when it's starting to come on where I need to kind of like step in a little bit. I got to pick up, like I can feel the heat start to come on, and you can know, okay, it's time. It's go time.
There's a vein right here in my forehead.
Yes, yes. You can tell, look at his face. It's a little red. Everything starts coming out. I'm like, on the basketball court, that's when you want to just step back and let him go to the hole. You don't want to get in his way. You know, the first time that we played pickup basketball, one of the very few first times, I was guarding somebody who talks a lot in our department, and I couldn't let him get off the last shot. And he's running around and I'm chasing him. And, you know, I'm not the greatest defender. It's not really what I like to do when I go play noon basketball, but I wasn't going to let him get the last shot. And I was running for myself as fast as I could. Oh, and next thing I know, I ran into a brick wall and I'm laying on the ground and I open my eyes and I look up and Matt is like standing over me. And I realized right then what it means to run through a brick wall for somebody. I played football. I've done a lot of things. I've never been hit that hard before. And I told Matt, he just put the tennis coach in concussion protocol that day for like 2 weeks. Oh, I was going to have to say so I'm always weary of trying to be on Matt's team or I'm going to guard Matt. Cause the last thing I want to be doing is chasing somebody else. And he's a great screener for people. Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, last one for me. This is the question I ask everyone at the end. Table 40 is the name of the podcast. So you're sitting at your table. You get 6 or 7 people. Your kids are already there, but these are 6 or 7. These can be like famous people. These can be like old friends. This can be
anybody.
This can be really anybody. We've had a lot of different answers. We've had some funny answers. And then what are the Youngs having for dinner? And that's my question.
Do we have to have the same thing to eat?
No,
can have your own. We've had people, one had sushi and one had Italian. It's a big table.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
So I only want dessert. Okay, I don't want any of the other stuff. So
which are they?
I would just have a brownie fudge sundae. That's all I want. Just an endless amount of ice cream. So hot brownie. Yes.
Hot
brownie. Hot brownie, hot fudge on it. That's what I want. I don't care about any of the other staples in life. And I kind of have this like obsession that I would love to meet Dolly Parton one day. So
please.
That is who I would like to come, because it's my goal to meet her. And so I would love to invite her to my table.
I'm now kind of motivated to help you meet Dolly Parton.
I would love to meet Dolly Parton. Let me see,
I know a few people that I could play Kevin Bacon with. Maybe we can make that happen.
Maybe. The fingers crossed. That would be awesome.
I mean, for me, I'm a steak guy, so I'm going to have my meat. And as long as I can have a really good steak potato, that'd be good for me.
No veggies.
Yeah, no.
He won't want any veggies, that's for sure.
I listened to Matt talk about being disciplined, though, today, and I got to be more disciplined in my my vegetables, maybe a little bit more. But for me, I just love being around, like, storytellers, like, people that, like, I just love sitting around and talking and sharing. So I'd have to have some people that have some really good stories. You know, I would love to, like, Agassi. I would love to be able just to, like, I think that guy has lived a colorful life.
I loved his book.
It's very open.
Yeah,
no pun intended.
Yeah.
But you know, I think just people who are storytellers. I don't know that we would probably want to get into offending any friends by choosing certain people. But you know, I'm a big Braves fan, so I'd love to have Chipper Jones at the table. Right. And I've never met him. And honestly, you know, I think there's some Chris Youngs out there. I would love to have the Chris Young on Chris Young, you know.
There's a lot of
all the Chris Youngs at one table.
The singer, the pitcher, and the tennis coach. You know, how good would that be? I think we would really have the trifecta there.
And there's the outfielder.
There is the outfielder.
The Chris Young outfielder. There's another Chris Young outfielder. There's two of them. One of them has a bad arm, the other one. Yeah,
they're way more athletic than me, you know, a lot smarter. When I listen to Chris Young's podcast, I'm like,
he's a genius.
But I'm not sure I could sit at his table because I'm not sure what I would bring to the table. But Chris Young, the country singer, you know, I think that might work out all right.
Maybe that we could have a podcast where we have all the Chris Youngs.
I'll listen. I'm not sure what I've added to this podcast, by the way, but we appreciate you guys having us on.
You guys are
so
great.
So glad that you came on. Thank you so much.
I mean, I really appreciate you guys coming on.
Thank you for listening to Table 40 with Matt and Leslie Holiday, part of the Sports Spectrum Podcast Network. For more stories on sports intersecting with faith, visit sportsspectrum.com.